your ageless faithfulness to your people, your creation. We will look to you, the author of our lives. Whatever pleases you will be our path, trading what we have for what will last. We will see your face and not your past. Whatever pleases you will be our path. When you hear your voice, when you call us out to the unknown, uncertain, we will call to mind your ageless faithfulness to your people, your creation. We will look to you, the author of our lives. Whatever pleases you will be our plan, trading what we have for what will last. We will see your face. Where the road will lead, we are empty and we are broken. But the enemy is strong and there seems nowhere to run. We will trust you, you are with us. We will look to you, the author of our lives. We will look. We will
Crash. them into prayers and turn that prayer into a conversation and turn that conversation into an opportunity for us to hear from you, receive courage from you, no matter what we face today or tomorrow. I ask God that you would be close to all of us. I ask that in Jesus' name, amen. Yeah, my hope is definitely that in our time of doing music, you know, that you're not, it's not like a weird concert or something, but you're actually using this time to connect with God. You're letting the music and the words kind of stir up something in you that maybe otherwise would have kind of stayed cold for the day. So I hope that's what you experience. That's my prayer for you guys and for myself. But why don't we take a moment just to say hey to somebody. Might be somebody's very first time. We want to make them feel welcome. So turn to somebody and say hey, shake a hand, and then have a seat.
And I am the student ministry director here at the West Side. This video makes me super excited. This happened last month. This was our first big experience. And this is something that we're actually going to do every month. So for some of you, the idea of 6th through 12th graders, there being over 1,500 of them sounds like your worst nightmare, I know. But it was actually amazing for the teenagers that were there. It was so much fun. And we just want to be able to create experiences for young people that connect them to God, that allow them to have fun, and connect them to other young people in this city that are on the same path. So, good opportunity for you today. If you have young people in your life, tell them the place they need to be tonight is big, okay? Westsiders, that means you will need to be here at 4:30. It is not too late to sign up. You can RSVP at crossroads.net/big. If you're riding on the bus with us, we need you to have a waiver, and you can print those out. Or we actually have some for you located at the student section outside there. Would love for you to be a part of this. It's going to be so much fun. Your students will be talking about it, and I think it will be a great opportunity for them to even just connect with God at a deeper level while they're having fun. The other thing that we have coming up in middle school and high school is camp. Summer is kind of near, right? It's getting a little warmer. We're feeling that warmth hit us, which reminds me of camp, and it's awesome. It's going to be great for our students. We have a middle school camp and a high school camp. If you want more information, we're actually going to have an info session for parents next Sunday, the 22nd, after our 11:45 service in the student section. So come get more information about our summer camps. Well, I'm really excited about a lot of things today. Obviously, big is one of them. The second one is, it's somebody's birthday in here. Can we clap it up for the birthday people? Yes. Whose birthday is it? It's your birthday. That's right. Westside has turned 1 year old. Clap for us. Yes. That's awesome. We are so excited about the many things that God has been doing on the West Side, and we want to celebrate that, and we want to do it in community with our family. So we are having a celebration in place of last Wednesday on March 25th. Come here. Food, fun, drinks, a party. We also have childcare for you. If you want to go ahead and come to that and RSVP for childcare, then we need you to sign up, RSVP by March 22nd, and you can find more information about that online. But we are so excited that God has gifted us this place, and we keep growing. So it's something to be really pumped up about. Now, in terms of our growth, we know that as we get bigger, it gets a little less easy to figure out who's here and recognize faces. Well, one of the things that helps to make that actually go in the opposite direction is our journey, Brave. So Brave is a six-week journey, and it's something that everybody in the church does, all the campuses. It's awesome. It's an opportunity for this place to become smaller so that you can start to go deeper in community. I know for me, I've been at Crossroads for about 10 years. My first journey group, I had some amazing women just walk with me through some difficult times and some joyful times. Some of those women are still my closest friends to this day. And that all started with just taking a step and being a part of a group, and I didn't know anybody in that group, and it was amazing. So in order for those groups to happen, we need hosts. We need about 3,100 hosts. We're sitting at about 700 right now, so we have a little ways to go, but we have time. So if you're interested in hosting, I encourage you to step out there, take a chance, be brave, get it, be brave, and host. So what you can do is go to crossroads.net/journey to get more information about that, and you can sign up to be a host there also. So the last thing I get excited about is giving. I absolutely love to give to all the things that God is doing in our community. And for me, I feel like it's an honor to be able to partner with him to fuel all of these amazing things. So what we're going to do, we're going to watch a video. And while we watch that video, we're going to have an opportunity to partner with Jesus and give back to all the amazing things that are happening in our community. So I encourage you to do that today. I encourage you to have fun today. And I encourage you to look at this video. We're having some more skills, dude skills. So take a look at this. Thanks for being here.
I'm Andy Lay, and this is Dude Skills. Dude skill number 6, first aid. Johnny.
Hi.
Remember that time we almost died?
Yeah.
You should always have a first aid kit with you when you go camping. If you don't have a first aid kit and you happen to break your leg, here's how to make a splint. All you need is duct tape and bourbon. Seriously though, if you're serious about camping, you need to have the bourbon. Here's how to make a splint. Find a straight stick and lay it parallel to your leg. Get some vines, string, or duct tape and wrap it tightly to the limb. You want to keep the limb as straight as possible to prevent further breakage. That was so dumb. That was awesome, though.
Wow. Is it just me, or is our production value slowly going down in these videos? I love it. My name is Greg. I'm the campus pastor around here. If we have not met yet, love that you're here, specifically 8:15. Way to get out of bed and get here. We get to spend some time together today. If you're new around Crossroads, typically we have a big screen that comes down and we receive a message from our Oakley campus from one of our teaching pastors there. But every now and again, we get a chance to hang out just as sites. And so today, that's what we'll be doing. Campus pastors get to interact with their crowds. And man, I'm excited to get to do this. I'm specifically excited we get a chance to talk because of what Courtney said, the fact that right now we are celebrating 1 year at Westside, and we got some good stuff to celebrate. So make sure, please make sure you sign up to attend our 1 year celebration at the end of this month. You're going to see last Wednesdays are canceled everywhere else. That is not for us. We'll be here on March 25th, have amazing worship. We're going to be hearing from people whose lives have been changed through this place. And then, of course, as every Westside party has, we'll have some food and drinks afterwards. So make sure you sign up for that. And we're not going to spend the whole time on that today, but I just got to tell you, this week has been unbelievable thinking about 1 year. Last weekend was the first time that we had, in the sort of attendance reports that go out for Crossroads, the first time we had year-over-year data. So what that means is every weekend, all the sites say, hey, this is what your attendance, and this is how much you were up given a year ago, a certain percentage. It's the first time we had the ability to compare where we were last year. And I looked at the numbers, I was like, there's no way this is right. We are up from the first weekend we opened, 285%. We have tripled since we opened Westside. That's unbelievable. That's unbelievable. You will not find church growth in our city that is like what God is doing right here at Crossroads Westside. And one other thing I gotta give you, because I think it's a shot in the arm. Last week, we did the Connect events, and so I was up in the Kids Club atrium, and somebody just slipped by really quick and shook my hand, and I realized, oh man, it's Brian Wells. If you've been around Crossroads for any amount of time, you know that it was started by 11 friends, And one of those original 11 was Brian Wells. In fact, he was sort of the Chuck Mingo for about a decade, and he was a teaching pastor. And Brian sent an email to me on Monday, and I just want to share a little bit of it with you. He said, I passed on to Brian Tome, what an outstanding experience it was at the Westside campus this weekend. I really mean that. If it was closer and you had room, I'd make it my campus. Really, great job. From the vibe in the lobby to the greeters to the auditorium experience, just excellent. The founder of Crossroads says, if I wasn't scared to drive from Mount Lookout west of 75 for my life, I would come to Crossroads Westside. Come on. That is awesome. That is awesome. And if you're around here right now and you're going, well, this is actually my first time, or I've only been here for a couple weeks, man, we want you here. We want you here. We want you to come in, and we want you to hear about Jesus in a language you can understand, and we think that it will have an unbelievable impact on your life. And we've got a lot of stuff around here. We've got a lot of tribal stories. We've got sort of a wolf pack culture within Crossroads and here at Westside. One of the things I'm excited about today is we're embarking on something that our wolf pack has done. This will be the third year. And if you're looking for a way into our wolf pack, you're going to get it this next week with something we call beans and rice. Check out this video. Middle school humor coming this week. I can smell it already. Somebody wrote in an email this week and said, hey, you might want to use this one. Instead of 50 shades of gray, this week's actually going to be 50 shades of brown. That's gross. That's gross. But I said it anyway because it's funny. Beans and rice, what is it? Well, what we do, if you saw from the video, we're saying this week we want to change our habits. We want to eat differently. We want to save the money, and we want that money to go outside of ourselves, to go after things that God's passionate about. And this year, we've got four initiatives. Before I tell you about those, man, wasn't Kirk Perry awesome last week? Kirk Perry, so, so good. Had a couple of people even around Westside come and say, you know, I used to report to Kirk through the baby care division at Proctor. Best boss I ever had, phenomenal leader, man of integrity. What we saw is exactly who he is. But if you were here, you know that Kirk talked about the fact that he started out in extreme poverty. And it's crazy to me to think that the person who right now is running 98% of the revenues at Google via their advertising was somebody who couldn't have done anything without a hand to pull him up out of the spot where he was at. That's why we do beans and rice. That's why we do beans and rice, because there are people in our city who, left to their own devices, will not be able to get out of the spot that they're in. And so this year, we've prayed hard, we've thought about it, and we're going to give to four specific initiatives, and I want to tell you about those right now. The first one is adoption and foster care. Adoption and foster care. You may not know this, but in our city, we've got over 2,500 foster children at any given time. 2,500 foster children who are pulled out of their biological families and placed with families in the short term. And of that number, up to 40% of them are regularly shipped out of Cincinnati to places like Toledo, Columbus, Lexington, because we don't have the infrastructure to support these children. Think about being pulled out of your home, and not only are you pulled out of your home, but you're sent to another city. We're not okay with that. We're not okay with that. So that's why we found a place called Coalition of Care. And it's their vision to make sure that every child has a home in Cincinnati through foster care and adoption. In the past 4 years, we've qualified 50 families here at Crossroads to be foster care parents. And with this money, we want to make that happen through Crossroads and through our city at other churches, so we don't have to send kids out of our city. We want there to be more foster care families, and that's why we're partnering with Coalition for Care. Second one, homelessness. Homelessness. Kirk talked last week about CityLink. And CityLink really goes after what we call the working poor. The working poor. But there's a whole nother segment in our city who are homeless. He mentioned that Cincinnati is one of the top 10 poorest cities in the country. I've heard that stat many times, and every time it still leaves me dead in my tracks. I think we're one of the top 10 poorest cities in the city. We've got over 7,000 people who are homeless. 2,000 of them are children. Think about the winter we just had. There probably wasn't a single one of us who at one point didn't think, man, I'm glad to have a roof over my head. I'm glad to have heat. There's 7,000 people without that. So we're partnering with City Gospel Mission. City Gospel Mission is to homelessness, as City Link is to the working poor. And right now, they're actually moving their facilities to double, even triple the capacity that they can have down in Queensgate. And so with Beans and Rice money, we're actually going to help them pay off their capital campaign so that we can come against homelessness in our city. Number three, economic vitality. Economic vitality. Man, God is for kids in homes. God is for getting people into roofs, out of homelessness, but those are all downstream issues. Those are all problems. As much as the kingdom is about solving those problems, it's got to be about upstream initiatives as well. It's got to be about amazing creativity and breathing life into our city. And one of those ways is through economic vibrancy in our city. Last year, as part of Beans and Rice, we actually started an accelerator called Ocean. Ocean is one of 200 accelerators worldwide, and yet it's the only one to take a business startup from start to a spot where it could potentially be gaining revenue and sponsors. It's the only one to have a spiritual and faith-based component. Say, it's not enough to say we're going to help you incubate up to the point where you can become profitable. We want you to be able to do that with integrity, and we want you to know Jesus along the way. So yet again, we're going to be partnering with Ocean and the different startups there to make sure that when they reach a space of maturity, that Jesus is a part of that as well. And finally, number four, it's the growing scourge in our city. You ask any healthcare worker, you ask any police officer, and they will tell you the black plague of our time is the heroin epidemic. Last year, the 11th hour, the initiatives were settled, and Terry Phillips down in Florence, our campus pastor, said, look, I just got to say, we've got people being riddled by heroin down here. We've got to do something about it. So well, that's funny. Westside's new, but I already know this has got a severe hold on the West Side. It was true actually all over our city. It's an epidemic, and we're not okay with it. Last year, the biggest chunk of money, it was actually $200,000, was divided between our sites and went to different agencies. And this year, we're doing the same thing. Here at Westside, we'll be supporting Prospect House. Prospect House is a blue chip recovery service. They're actually a residential recovery program. They've got one of the largest capacities in the city. At any given time, they can handle up to 80 men. And those 80 men have a 2 out of 3 chance of living a long-term life of sobriety. If you know anything about the recovery world, 2 out of 3 is a phenomenal rate. To say that 2 out of 3 guys come out of there with a clean life for the rest of their life, we're giving to Prospect House. And exciting news, I just got yesterday, got a call from the director and said, unbelievable, we've actually secured a matching gift. So for every dollar you raise through Beans and Rice, we've got someone who's going to give another dollar to that. And we think we're actually going to be able to buy an elevator that's going to make us the first ADA compliant, handicap accessible recovery agency for heroin addicts in our city. These are the things. Yes, you can clap for that. It's the way God works. He sees people take notice and he wants to put additional resources around it. And the crazy thing is, we get to go after these things this week. Not by bleeding ourselves dry, not by a campaign, but by eating differently. By eating differently, by changing our diet for 1 week. So here's how this thing's gonna work. My goal for Westside is 100% participation. That is not 100% compliance. If you wanna eat 3 meals a day of beans and rice for 7 days a week, go for it, go for it. You'll probably end up sleeping on the couch, but go for it. It'll be good for you. I'll tell you what my family did last year. We went to the grocery and started putting all the beans and rice in our cart, and we realized this is going to be as much as a normal grocery trip. So we left it, and we went home. We realized we've got more food in our pantry that's been in the back of the pantry for months that if we just ate on this stuff, we wouldn't have to spend any money on food. So we were able to do that, not go out to eat, and everything that we saved, we gave to the Beans and Rice Initiative. So whatever you want to do, maybe you just want to do it at lunch, maybe you want to do it, you're going on a business trip, so you only do it half the week, this is what our pack is going to be doing this week. And as you do that, you'll have the opportunity to give. You can go to crossroads.net/give on your mobile device, and you'll see there will actually be a line item that says beans and rice. So if you're at Skyline, or you would have been at Skyline, and you're at your desk eating your peanut butter and jelly, you want to go on there and give your $7 right there at lunch because you saved on the price of a four-way and a Diet Coke. Or maybe you were going to go to Boca on Friday. Actually, Westside, we don't go to Boca. We go to Nick and Tom's. Maybe you forgo going to Nick and Tom's on Friday night. And so you go on and put in your $50 that you would have spent there. And if you're not a technical person, we just want to let you know, next weekend we'll be taking up an offering. You can bring cash, and we'll put it right here on this stage. And we're going to take that to go out after these initiatives that God's put our minds after, put our hearts after. And we've got an amazing opportunity to go after it. So that's beans and rice. We'll come back a little bit to that before we go any further. Why don't we just pray? God, thankful that you are able to use even crazy creative ideas like eating differently for a week to go after epic problems like foster care, homelessness. We just, we're happy to be partners with you in this work, and we pray that this week would draw us closer to you through new habits. Amen. Amen. One of my favorite things in my office is this wooden plaque. If you were around last year at this time, you know what this is. It says the new man, and it's got the five marks of a man on it. In fact, this series, week one of Wolfpack, Brian recapped the marks of manhood. This was an awesome series, one of the first series that we did at Westside. And we said, look, this is the behavior of a boy, but when you become a man, you start to do these things. You start to take a minority position. You start to work hard. You start to protect others. And when we redid this at the beginning of this series, I thought, you know, this plaque is really cool. And me, like many others, at the end of that New Man series, I came down front, and I had a man bless me with these marks of a man, and I got this plaque, and I put it on my shelf. But as we went through them again a year later, I thought, I don't know that I've really improved on any of these marks of manhood. I have the plaque. It's my favorite thing in my office. It looks cool. It's reclaimed barnwood, and everyone loves that. But is it really changing the way I act? You know, the new man's a team player. Am I a team player? Do I always pull my team together and say, hey, we've got a big decision to make, or do I close my door and fire off an email? Does my calendar rule my family team's calendar? Am I sitting down saying, hey, what's coming up in April? What occurred to me is that this plaque is great, but if I don't have habits to back it up, the new man means nothing to me. It's a big idea for today. Where you direct your habits, you direct your life. Where you direct your habits, you direct your life. Now, through this series, we've been talking about a guy named David. And David was God's chosen king to lead the nation of Israel. And at the time when David was chosen, there was a king named Saul, and God was not happy with what Saul was doing. So he spoke to a prophet named Samuel. He told Samuel, hey, I want you to go and find me a new king. And here's what you're going to do. You're going to go to a father named Jesse who's got many sons. I want you to go there. I want you to tell him, hey, clean up your sons, consecrate yourself for worship because I'm about to anoint a new king. And so Jesse pulls all of his sons together and he gets them ready. And Samuel goes there and he sees right away the oldest son, the most strapping son. He goes, this has got to be it. This has got to be God's chosen one. And he hears God tell him something. It's recorded in the book of 1 Samuel. This is what God says. It says, Samuel, for the Lord sees not as a man sees. Man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart. Says Samuel, hey, I know you think you know what I'm looking for in a king, but I'm not looking at the outward appearance. I'm actually looking at the inside. I'm looking at the heart. Now, this heart term has gotten a little bit soft in our American culture. He's not telling him, hey, I'm looking at the heart. I'm looking for a guy who will cry at the notebook. That's not what he's saying. He's not saying, I'm looking for a guy who's really into Pilates. He's not saying, if you've ever been hooked up on a date before, he's not saying, I'm looking for a guy with a really good personality. If anyone's ever said that to you, that's a bad thing, actually. You don't want someone that's just got a, it's bad. He's looking at the heart. He's looking at the heart. What he's saying is, I'm looking at the mind. I'm looking at the will. I'm looking at the habits. Why? Because our habits reveal our heart. And God's looking for someone to lead his people. He's looking for somebody who's going to be able to trust with the nation of Israel. And he says, Samuel, look, I know that you're going to be looking at the outside appearance, but I'm going to be looking at habits. I'm going to be looking for heart. So Samuel gets through every son, and he realizes God said no on every single one of them. So he says to Jesse, the father, I'm sorry, are there any other sons? He says, well, yeah, I've got one. He's sort of a runt. He's out in the field. His name's David. He's taking care of the sheep. I think it's fascinating that the only son who didn't drop what he was doing and clean up and come to meet with God's prophet was the guy who had a habit of hard work. He's the same guy who was out monitoring his sheep with a sling and little stones fending off the bears and the wolves. He's the same guy who would later kill a Goliath, kill a giant with that same sling and those stones. And when he comes, when he's brought, Samuel hears immediately from God, hey, this is the one that I want to anoint as king over all my people. And it was because of his habits. Before we go on, I think we can just talk amongst ourselves and realize everybody's got habits. In fact, you've got habits that you don't even realize. And the reason why is because we are hardwired for habit. Point number one, hardwired for habit. As I was preparing for this message and I was thinking through, what are some habits that I have? I thought, well, I'll talk to my wife and I'll send her a text and say, hey, would you let me know some of the habits I have? What she apparently read that text to mean was, would you make a laundry list of all of my bad habits? And in fact, she sent it to me so quickly, I think it was already saved on her phone, just waiting for an opportunity to give it to me. So she gave me some of my bad habits, and some of these I thought, man, okay, yes, this is a bad habit. One of them, well, here's the first habit I have. Anytime I give a message, if I can show you a picture of my cute kids, it's a win. So here's Emmy and Liv. Emmy's the older one, Liv's the younger one, and this past week, I came home, and much like I always do, I walk in the garage door, and I hear their feet running over, and I sort of am just closing out business for the day. So I've got my phone, and I'm making sure, okay, got that email, got to listen to this voicemail, good. And apparently, when this is in my hand, I don't listen very well, because my youngest, Liv, ran up to me and just went, dad, 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 daddy, 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 daddy. I've trained my youngest that daddy doesn't listen for his name just one time. If you want his attention when he has his phone in his hand, you got to say it 8 times in a row. That's probably a bad habit. That's probably a bad habit. Another one, man, after I get home, it's wintertime and it's boot season, right? We're all wearing boots. And so there's nothing better than, man, sitting down, taking off the boots. Feels so good. But I got to tell you, the thing that I really love to do at the end of the day, my socks, they've gotten damp. They're a little sweaty. Nothing feels better than just peeling those socks off. And number one on my wife's list was, you know, you don't really pick those up. You don't really pick those up. In fact, I find your socks all over the house all the time. She's fine cleaning up after the girls. She'll take all their stuff upstairs, all their toys and stuff. But for some reason, my pile of socks just gets to stay at the bottom of the steps, kind of like a monument to the guy who takes off his socks and leaves them everywhere. It's a bad habit. And one that I got to tell you, this unfortunately impacts you, Westside. I love meeting you. I love to meet new people. I love to come up to you in the atrium and say, hi, I'm Greg. Who are you? And you tell me, and while you're telling me who you are, I'm thinking, do I know this person? They look familiar. I wonder if they came from Oakley. I wonder if they're new around here. Who are their friends? And you say, okay, Greg, it was good to see you. And I say, good to see you too. Good to see you too. And I don't even remember what your name is. That's really embarrassing to me. In fact, last week I was at Sullivan's, picked up some La Rosa's pizza, picked up a six-pack, and in the line, there's a wonderful couple. I know them. I see their faces all the time. We're talking about my beer and their beer, and all of a sudden it occurs to me, it's been way too long, and after 6 months, I would look like a total chump if I said, hey, remind me of your name again. It's a bad habit. So Grace, if I come up to you and say, hey, dude, you can just say, hey, my name's Tom. My name's Tom. That would help me out a lot. They're bad habits. They're bad habits. We've all got them. And in fact, if you don't think you have any habits, just text your significant other and they'd be happy to fill you in on them. But they don't always have to be bad. In fact, we've got another thing that we do around the New Year's time of year. We try to make huge habits. We try to make huge habits. Oh, yeah, my New Year's resolution, something simple, 1,500 calories a day this year. Or just join New Planet Fitness, 10 bucks a month. I'll probably go every day. Something easy, probably go every day. We go after these big habits, but what if actually only one habit could change everything? There's a retired naval admiral, and I love this quote that he has. He talks about what it is to make your bed. Check out what he says. He says, if you make your bed every morning, you'll have accomplished the first task of the day. It'll give you a small sense of pride, and it will encourage you to do another task and another and another. By the end of the day, that one task completed will have turned into many tasks completed. Making your bed will also reinforce the fact that little things in life matter. If you can't do the little things right, you'll never do the big things right. And if by chance you have a miserable day, you'll come home to a bed that's made, that you made. And a made bed gives you encouragement that tomorrow will be better. If you want to change the world, start off by making your bed. See, he talks about the idea that habit is actually a really powerful thing. Even by just changing one habit, we have the ability to change the trajectory of our life. We have the ability to do sort of a ripple effect. It's called a keystone habit, a keystone habit. Now, I know that habits are hardwired, and I can't imagine living without them, and in some ways, I'm experiencing that right now. Like I said, I got a 4- and a 2-year-old, and there are some things that you or I could do very quickly, and the fact that they can't do them runs out my patience in no time flat. For instance, brushing teeth. Brushing teeth. Man, you or me, we could be brushing our teeth really quickly, and we could even think, like, did I brush my teeth today? Yes, yes, I did. Except my daughters, you know, they get their toothbrush out. It's probably downstairs somewhere gross, like laying beside the toilet, and they get it out, and they squeeze the toothpaste on it, half a tube, right? And then the toothbrush tips, and it sticks on the counter. And then whatever toothpaste is in there, they immediately swallow before they brush any of their teeth, and they're left with water all over their shirt. Very inefficient. But you or I, we can do this stuff like the back of our hands. Why is it? It's because we have a brain that operates out of habit to make us more efficient. There's an author right now, he's got a book on the New York Times bestseller list. His name's Charles Duhigg, and he talks about the power of habit. And he talks about why exactly our brains are created this way. Check this out. It says, habits, scientists say, emerge because the brain is constantly looking for ways to save effort. Left to its own devices, the brain will try to make almost any routine into habit because habits allow our minds to ramp down more often. This effort-saving instinct is a huge advantage. An efficient brain requires less room, which makes for a smaller head, which makes childbirth easier, and therefore causes fewer infant and mother deaths. An efficient brain also allows us to stop thinking constantly about basic behaviors, such as walking and choosing what to eat, so we can devote mental energy to inventing spears, irrigation systems, and eventually airplanes and video games. He says, man, the reason that we're created, the reason we're wired for habits, we can do things no other creatures can do. We can actually put ourselves on autopilot and go through brushing our teeth so we can think about more important things like, what do I have to do today? How can I innovate in my life? That's why we're creatures. That's why we're wired for habit. Last week, we took the girls to the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus, greatest show on earth. Heads up, it's 3 hours long with an intermission, and your kids will be asking you by the end, when is this over? That's not what I thought about the circus, but we took my mom along, and as we were walking, we parked under the banks, and so we walked by Great American Ballpark. We walked up the steps to the Coliseum, U.S. Bank, and midway through, she stopped, and she just said, hey, I would not have been able to do this a year ago. Well, what do you mean? Well, a year ago, I was still smoking, you know, almost pack a day, and I wouldn't have had the breath power to get here. Probably wouldn't even have the money to pay in the parking garage, so I can't believe what's happened in my life since then. I'm not calling out any habit. I'm not even calling it a bad habit. I'm just saying that habit had a ripple effect in her life. It was a keystone habit that, because of that, every area of her life was affected. And in fact, it wasn't just a habit. It was a habit that was affecting her life so much, it was setting her heading. Second point today, habits set your heading. We are a vision-obsessed culture. Vision-obsessed culture, we see it when you walk into your corporation. Maybe it's in front of the elevator. Maybe it's on the glass wall. Everyone wants to know what the vision is. And in fact, it's even starting to penetrate into families. We watch a lot of shows and HGTV kind of thing. They've always got their family mission on the wall. Or maybe people who I've seen lately going on retreats to actually talk about what the vision of their family is at the beginning of a year. And maybe if that seems too intense for you, you've at least been in a house before where you've seen like live, laugh, love decals on the wall. That's sort of what our family's about, these three things. You may have also been in a house before where by the end of leaving that house, you go, I'm not sure that there's any laughter here or love, and I definitely wouldn't want to live here. There's a disconnect. Because why? It's because without habits, vision is nothing. Without habits, vision is nothing. Crossroads. We're a vision-obsessed culture. We've got a vision to connect seekers with a community of growing Christ followers who are changing the world. But we've got habits to back it up. Man, we run hard. We make aggressive mistakes. We work hard around here. We take risks. They're all things that help us get to the vision that we have. Hey, if your vision is your destination, then habits are your car. Habits are your gas. Habits are your map. Habits are the road. Habits are everything, and vision is nothing without it. Your heading is set by your habits. A guy named Seth Godin is a business author, and I love what he says about this potential disconnect between vision and habits. He says, your audacious life goals are fabulous. We're proud of you for having them. But it's possible that those goals are designed to distract you from the thing that's really frightening you, a shift in daily habits that would mean a reinvention of how you see yourself. He says, hey, I love that everybody these days seems to have a vision. I love that we're all going after a certain heading, but what you don't realize is it possible that we're thinking about these big picture vision ideas because we're too afraid to do the small, intimate, personal work of changing our habits, changing our habits. We've talked so far about David, and as I went back and looked at David's life, I saw there was a very clear turning point in David's life. He was anointed king. He became an unbelievable warrior. He led the nation of Israel to victory after victory. In fact, people would chant the old King Saul. They'd say, Saul has killed his thousands, but David, he's killed his 10,000s. That did not make Saul happy. He was a victor. He would ride on the front lines, front horse, full armor, and he'd take thousands of people. He'd take cities. He'd take horses. He'd take chariots. And he had a track record of victory. And there was a turning point in his life where he turned away from his habits, and it started setting his heading in a downward spiral. Brian talked about it already. He had just gotten in from battle, and he hunkered down inside his kingdom, and the book of 2 Samuel picks it up from there. It says, when the time of year came around again, the anniversary of the Ammonite aggression, a battle that he had fought, David dispatched Joab, one of his top guys, and his fighting men of Israel in full force to destroy the Ammonites for good. They laid siege to Rabbath, but here it is. But David stayed in Jerusalem. David stayed in Jerusalem. From the point he's anointed king until now, he's led the nation of Israel to victory time and time again. He hears God say, hey, I want you to go take this city. Hey, I want you to go take this land for me. And David leads the charge. But this one time he says, hey, you know what? I'm going to hang back here. Joab, you're my man. I want you to go out. I want you to lead the troops, and I'm going to stay back here. And what happens? He's in his palace. He's on the balcony. He sees a beautiful woman bathing. He calls for her. He sleeps with her. Ends up finding out that it's actually one of his other top guy's wife. So then he has this top guy killed on the front lines of battle. Bathsheba gets pregnant, and God ends up taking the child after it's born. And you see that from an upward trajectory of David, who is unstoppable, his heading has all of a sudden shifted in a totally different direction. And the rest of his kingship is spent fighting to keep control of his kingdom. His habits directed his heading. I've had times in my life where I maybe didn't realize it at first, but where I've realized, man, I have some habits that are directing my heading. My first job out of college, I'd actually co-opted there. And during that co-op, got a letter that said, hey, when you graduate, we would love to have you work here. That was awesome. It was awesome. It was one of the fastest growing companies in the city. It was also one of the largest privately held companies. So this company had a lot of accolades, and I was really excited to work there. The problem was, is I absolutely hated it. I mean, I would get in on Monday, and the only thing I would think about from Monday until Friday is how to get out at 5 p.m., and when 5 p.m. hit on Friday, I was out the door running. In fact, the only good thing I had about that job happened on the 15th and the 30th. It was a paycheck. It was the only good thing about that job. And I got into this sort of rhythm of on Sunday nights to take sort of the edge off of Monday morning. I just grabbed my keys, I'd head out, and I'd go somewhere, I don't know, Target, Best Buy, and maybe pick up a shirt, maybe pick up a DVD, a CD. And it wasn't a big deal. Until I realized that, wait a second, my job is taking me so bad that at the end of the weekend, I've got to go out and buy something. This feels weird to me. But it didn't just stop there, because that buying grew sort of bigger and bigger, and it led to thinner margins at the end of the month. About the same time, I started coming around Crossroads, started hearing things like, hey, if you believe in Jesus, you got to serve him with everything. You got to serve him with your money. And I thought, I don't have any money left at the end of the month. I can't give to God. And ultimately, this small rhythm, this small habit of spending on Sunday nights led me to a place where I believed that God was mad at me. I believe that God was mad at me because I couldn't give him anything. And then I realized, you know, this isn't even a habit issue. This is a heart issue. Much like Kirk, I grew up in a trailer park, just like Kirk did. I grew up hoping that I'd get things that I needed at birthdays and Christmas. And I started to think, man, is my spending on Sunday nights trying to reinforce to myself that I'm not there anymore? And so to show that I'm not there anymore, I'm gonna make purchases, I'm gonna swipe my card because that's the way out of it. When I realized it was not a habit problem, it was a heart problem, man, that's a bad spot to be in. That's a bad spot to be in when you see your habits have a much deeper meaning, and all of a sudden it became a really hard thing to climb out of. But there was good news. There's good news because you see, your habits don't just change by your own brute strength. New hearts, new habits flow from new hearts. New habits flow from new hearts. We started coming around Crossroads more and more. Felt a little guilty that I wasn't able to do some of the things I wanted to do. And yet I heard this scripture. I heard this promise of what happens when we meet Jesus. It's out of the old book of Ezekiel. This is the promise that says when we meet Jesus. It says, I'll give you a new heart and a new spirit I'll put within you. And I'll remove the heart of stone from your flesh and I'll give you a heart of flesh. I'll put my spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes and be careful to obey my rules. God says, hey, I'm not gonna come in, I'm not gonna break your habits and replace them. I'm gonna do something far better. I'm actually gonna take your old heart, I'm gonna give you a new one. I'm gonna give you a new one, and in fact, that new heart, it's gonna cause you to walk in my ways. It's gonna cause you to be careful to obey my rules. That's an unbelievable deal. That's an unbelievable deal. And slowly, as that new heart took root, I realized, wait a second, if I can trust God with my life, I can certainly trust God with my money. And my heart started to do things like, maybe we should participate in beans and rice. Maybe we shouldn't just take pictures of it, but maybe at the end we should actually give some money away because this generosity thing feels good. And maybe we should experiment on the weekend with putting some money in the bag all the way until we eventually were able to do the full tithe and give our 10% to God because we felt we could trust him with our money. But that's something, man, I could have never set that as a new habit for myself. There's no way. It came out of the realization that God's put a new heart in me. You realize what this is saying? This is saying God's not concerned about what you don't do. God's not concerned about who you're not. He's way more concerned with who he can turn you into. Over the past 12 months, sort of being a campus pastor, I've had more conversations with people on a spiritual level than ever. And in one way, I love it, but it also bums me out from time to time because I tend to hear the same talk tracks over and over. And they're things like, hey, we'd love to come check out your church, but I got some stuff that I need to clean up first, and so I'll come around there soon enough. Or, man, would love to get in a small group, but I've got some habits right now, and I just need to clean them up. Hey, God is not waiting for you to break or create new habits to engage with your life. He's not. Instead, he's saying, I know that you can't do it, so I want to take out the old heart. I want to give you a new one, and this new heart is going to give you the power to change. It's going to flow with new habits, and those new habits are going to help you to obey me, and they're going to lead to a life of freedom. Some of you, you've known Jesus for a long time, and you've got a new heart. It just needs to be activated. It just needs to be activated. You see, the new heart that was put inside of us, man, it starts to beat when we go after the things that God's about. I've got one great habit for you to try this week to potentially activate your new heart. It's called beans and rice. It's called beans and rice. In some crazy way, changing your diet for 7 days and saving the difference to give outside yourself can bring alive the new heart that God gave you and can say, hey, God, my heart beats for the things that your heart beats for. I'm excited to do this because you've given me a new heart. But habits are hard to just pick up. You got to have sort of a reason. You got to have a reason to believe. And man, I've got one. I've got one to share with you. This is a letter from a guy named Terry. And Terry was a recipient of a scholarship last year with some of the heroin money, the heroin dollars, that went to Chad's Hope, an agency in Northern Kentucky who helps get men out of addiction. And Terry wrote this letter in January of this year. He says, my name's Terry G. Smith. I'm a student at Chad's Hope in Manchester, Kentucky. I entered the program on June 2nd, 2014. I'm graduating the program on January 22nd, 2015. I want you to understand that none of this would have been possible for me without your support. A lot of forgiveness and restoration has taken place since I've been here. God's restored my family and has given us true forgiveness. See, my wife and I have been divorced for 7 years. We only first began to talk to each other in May of 2014. Remember, I entered Chad's Hope on June 2nd. God is so good to us that on November 21st, right here at Chad's Hope, our director remarried my wife and I. Thank you, Jesus. I don't know if words could ever express how thankful I am to Christ, who died on that cross for me, and how your unselfish giving has changed my life. So for my wife, my children, my grandchildren, and myself, thank you. Signed, Terry G. Smith. Man, when Terry entered into Chad's Hope, he had one thing on his mind. It was a bad habit. He said, I'm wired for this habit. This habit's got me set in a wrong heading, and I don't want to go down this road anymore. But he had no idea. He had no idea that while he was in that program, he would meet a man named Jesus, and that Jesus would take his old heart, and he'd give him a new one. And all of a sudden, it would have a ripple effect on his life. And not only would the needle be taken out of his arm, but he'd be reunited with his wife. He'd be reunited with his children. He'd be reunited with his grandchildren. Why? Why was all that possible? Because some crazy church in Cincinnati decided to eat rice and beans for 1 week, and his life will never be the same. That's the opportunity we get this week. Friends, if you change your diet for 1 week, yes, you will be different, and you'll know God more. But the lives that you will impact are unstoppable. We'll be able to actually put children into homes in our city to be loved for. We'll actually be able to put homeless people under roofs to have hot meals. We'll be able to create economic vibrancy in our city. All of these things because we choose to do a habit that sparks the new heart that God put inside of us. And we get to partner with him to do the things that his heart beats for. God, I pray that this beans and rice week would not only be fun, but it would spark something new in us. It would make the heart that you gave us beat for you. And God, I'm glad that you choose us to partner with. It's in your name we pray, Jesus. Amen. Hey, awesome that you are here today. Go out, eat beans and rice. I wanna see your pictures. And next week, we're gonna be taking an offering, cash on the stage. We're gonna change some lives. Get out here, have a great week.